Hi, Dedicators, and a huge welcome to this super awesome episode of the Dedicate podcast. Today, I am talking to co-founder of Girls Get Off, Viv Conway. Girls Get Off is a female-owned business that sells a variety of products for female pleasure. They're on a mission to empower women in all things pleasurable, removing the stigma or taboo that comes with talking about and making the most of getting off. Today, I chat to Viv about her business journey, including pre-Girls Get Off, her challenges with depression, doing an Ironman, moving to Australia, and more. It's an absolute goodie. Thanks for coming on.
Easy breezy.
I'm actually did an unboxing yesterday, and I'm going to post it after this.
Yay, I can't wait.
And it's quite funny because it's just me, I'm like, it's like if you'd watched it without listening to it, you'd think I was just unboxing like and not something like really plain and ordinary.
Yeah. So I love it.
Yeah, and there's just a little, yeah, it's quite funny. Like, and people that wouldn't know me would think, oh shit, she's quite serious, but I'm just like, keep this professional sort of approach.
That's so good. Did Chinny set that affiliate code up for you?
Yeah, that's okay, all running.
Cool. Awesome. Yep. Yay, wicked.
I got a whole box of like all your goodies.
Perfect. Good. Yeah, amazing.
So it's amazing. Thank you.
Oh, enjoy.
Yeah. So I thought we'd just go back to the beginning and sort of start with where you grew up and that sort of stuff. So you're Kiwi?
I am.
But you've just moved to Australia a year and a half ago?
Yeah, 2 years ago now.
2 years ago. Cool. Yeah. So we'll get into that. But where did you grow up?
So I grew up in Tauranga. Yeah. I went to school in Tauranga Girls. Lots of fun. I grew up doing a lot of sport as well, primarily things where I couldn't hurt myself or that didn't involve a lot of coordination, like swimming or running. Yeah. I had a really fun time. After I went to uni in Otago and then went back to Mount Maunganui where I lived for a while before moving to Sydney a couple of years ago, and it's been just great. It's only just starting to get cold here, and I vowed never to live somewhere colder than Sydney again. So even this little bit of like wind that we've had has been like, oh, I'm not sure about this, but I'm only wearing a long sleeved like shirt and I'm like, oh, I don't know about this winter stuff, not like Twizel where you are freezing.
Oh yeah, well it's 22 degrees today, which is pretty good for April, but okay. In a month's time it could be minus 10.
Yeah, no, never again.
I'm really dreading this winter for some reason. Like, I was really starting to get used to it, and that last winter was a shocker. Like, we had so much fog. Have you ever been to Twizel when it's foggy? And heard of the hoarfrost?
No, I have heard of hoarfrost, but not, I haven't experienced the fog.
Yeah, so we get the hoarfrost in Twizel, which is because fog comes in. So it's clear at night and it like freezes, and then the fog comes in, and so you get no sun. So it's just like frozen on frozen on frozen. It's like being in like Antarctica or something. And like 20 minutes down the road, it's sunny.
And it's. Stop.
Oh, it's horrible. And you question your life choices. You're like, what did I do to end up here? But then we'll be sitting on the edge of the lake, you know, and there's hardly anyone around, and you're like, yeah, this is why we live here. Like, we do our time over winter, and then we sort of deserve our, you know, goodness. Sorry, I'm just taking my jizz up. But anyway, uni, if I remember rightly, you did some, started sort of businesses there.
Yeah, so I actually ended up studying food science at university. Obviously went down to do first year health science like everyone else, figured out pretty quickly that chemistry and physics, not my strong point. I think the first semester physics test, it's like multi-choice 50 questions or something, and you get added up like your attendance at different labs. I think I got a total of 12 marks out of 50. Was it 12 out of 50 or out of like, yeah, well, 12, you need 50 to pass, right? Yeah. So 12. And my friend was like, you literally could have just marked all B's in your exam, multi-choice, and you would have got a higher mark than what you did. So it was pretty shocking.
But you obviously did well in high school with your sciences to go and do that.
Well, I think I've just always been a bit of a grinder. Like, yeah. I think I liked it enough And I liked a bit of chemistry. I failed chemistry the first time round, had to redo that for food sci. Gosh, I think there was a paper every semester that I thought, am I going to fail? I'm going to have to change my whole course again. So I like looking back, I'm like, man, I could have just chosen something I would have been really good at, like history or languages or something. But, you know, good hard things are good for you. So I did, food science. And at the time I started a sportswear brand. So I'd found an account on Instagram that had these really colorful, cool tights and activewear. And I messaged the account. It was all in Spanish. And I said, can I buy a pair of tights? And they said, sorry, we only do wholesale. So you've got to buy 12 pairs. And I thought, oh, well, I'll buy 12 then. And I'm sure I can sell 12.
And that was love the tights.
Yeah. Well, that was sort of the start. And they were really like vibrant and colorful. And I'd seen how in the like swimming world, how we used to grow up with just like blue or black Speedos. And that was it, unless you wanted something that wasn't like chlorine resistant. Yeah. And then you'd seen that go. And then everyone wore like real groovy swimmers. So I thought, oh, well, maybe the same thing will happen with activewear, and started building out that business. And it was very good learning curves. And yeah, from there, I was still doing the activewear when I had left uni and was working in what I looked like my real job in the deer industry. And then people had started to ask, how are you growing your Instagram account? Like, how are you making sales from Instagram and Facebook and so on? And so started helping other people, answering their questions. And then a friend was also building up her Instagram account at the time. She was doing it more from a point of view of being an influencer, but her goal right at the beginning was, if I can build up this like foodie Instagram, it can be like my portfolio when I'm going for jobs to show them like what I'm capable of. So she was coming at it from that like personal brand point of view. I was coming at it from a business point of view. So we then started managing Instagram accounts for people, and we teamed up and created our like agency together, which was Instagram specific. It was very like left field at the time. People were asking like, what are you going to do when Instagram dies, you know? And even my parents were like, you know, they'd never been to university, their daughter's just gone to university, first one in the family, and I'm like, I'm gonna quit my job for Instagram. They're like, okay, all right, like, can't you just do that on the side? So yeah, it's been a bit of a journey.
But obviously you've got huge entrepreneurial spirit. Like, has that always been that way? Are your parents the same? Where do you think that came from?
I think, you know what, I think it's always been that way, but I've never articulated it. So when I went off to uni, I thought, oh, I'll just become like a pharmacist, because I was under the impression that you had to be like a pharmacist to own pharmacies. I thought people always get sick, like that'd be great, I'll just own some pharmacies. And even when I was younger, you know, like selling things to my sisters, and then as it progressed, I think like my entrepreneurship paper at uni, while I had the tights business, I found a lot of the business papers were just like, quite honestly, I was like, this is such a waste of time. Like when I had the business at the same time, I'm like, the biggest thing you need to learn about in business is like how to hold on and solve problems, not these like wishy-washy concepts. And I love
the terms and everything, like just rote learning and then forget it.
Yeah, this is so irrelevant and so easy compared to actual business. But the entrepreneurship paper I took at university was like a standout, such a good paper. And I really, really loved that. So I think over time I realized that, oh, I've actually always been quite business-minded. I've probably just never realized. My parents are not business-minded. I think when I started the business, I knew like my uncle that had a business, and then like my friend's dad had a business. Wow. So I would like find anyone that I could that had businesses, but it was quite, I would say it was not common for people around me to have businesses or for me to know them. Like I'd go and see Izzy's dad and ask him questions around my tights business or, you know, how he built up his chemical company, you know? And then over time have just met people from there. I remember the first like networking kind of event that I went to, and I honestly almost cried. I was like, oh my gosh, there's actually other people who are doing this stuff. This is wild. And I'd just come from like the deer factory and had to like quickly have a shower because I smell gross. And then I was like, oh my God, there's other people doing this in Tauranga. This is amazing. And Pascaline, one of the ladies who invited me from that, she must have heard me speak somewhere. Like I must have gone back to my high school and talked to some staff or something about what I was doing. And she was like, you need to come down to Bay Station and do one of these evenings. And we're still like, I would call her a great friend to this day. Like she's just awesome. So it's been funny how I've built up the network over the years.
It's amazing. You just get out there and you do things and you come across people and you make connections. It's like they come about just by getting yourself out there, don't they? You don't sort of necessarily have to look. You have your blinkers on, but you, yeah, it's amazing what happens when you get into it. And so, with the tights business, how long did you do that for? Was the dear job? Yeah. Was that through your food science stuff? Sorry, two yeah. questions, but answer whichever one first.
Yeah, so I had the activewear brand from, say, like second year uni, and then I think I sort of, when I was doing my, so first year, second year uni, third year uni, went and worked for a year in at the deer factory. And over that time, I sort of like put it on pause. I didn't put any effort into marketing that because we were managing other people's Instagram accounts. And I was actually doing heaps of training at the time. And then after, I think maybe a year or two after that, I was like, I was always like, yeah, I'll come back to that. I'll get that going again. I'll get that going again. And so then I sold that. And then the, yeah, so I was quality manager at a deer co-products factory. So we, they would get slaughtered somewhere else and then we would get the bits. So if you've heard of like deer velvet before, antler, pizzles, tails, sinew, we did some like placenta trials, blood powder, everything, all the bits, we would process those into various different forms and then get that ready for export to markets like Hong Kong and Taiwan and so on.
Awesome, because velvet's meant to be really good for you, isn't it?
Yeah, so velvet? I think velvet was the only product that had like Western scientific backing, but it was all like, I think sometimes like bodybuilders take it or yeah, it's good for growth, I believe. Yeah, it was a whole different world. I think I was telling some friends the other day who thought that was just the strangest job out of uni. I was like, yeah, I forget that I did this. And I think my first 2 days I spent plucking pubes off the balls of the pizzles.
So I kind of feel like penises. It's kind of led you to where you are now.
I know. Yeah. It's always been like phallic themed, right? And so I spent 2 days with tweezers like plucking the pubes off the balls because they had to be like nicely presented, the dried ones when they got shipped off in their nice little vacuum sealed like boxes.
Oh, that's classic. And then what happened with your agency?
So Tash and I, we did that business from, it must have been like 4 or 5 years, I guess. And so we ran accounts for a number of different people. And it got to the stage where, so we did a lot of content and we also did account management. So that means we were doing like photos for people. And then we were also running people's Instagram accounts organically, and I don't think we were doing any paid at that time. And then it sort of got to the stage where we realized that we sort of had different goals, even though we'd set the strategy. We was kind of on different wavelengths, so we actually split that business up, and I went and kept the account management side of things, and she kept the content side of things. And I think we actually, well, I know that the first year of us doing business separately, we both did more revenue in a year doing essentially half the business each, like, and we over more than double the revenue. So it just goes to show, like, when you believe in what you're doing and when you're sort of focused on it, what results that can get. And Tash and I are still best of friends. I'm her maid of honor in about a month. Cool. So yeah, we're still besties, but it was it was a very cool experience, and obviously all that learning set me up for what we do at Girls Get Off today, which is cool.
Yeah, it's amazing. And so I'm quite intrigued by that. So do you think you were spreading yourselves too thin, or was there too much like time communicating? You couldn't get really stuck into your own thing.
Yeah, I think we were spreading ourselves too thin a little bit, but I think it was just a belief. Like it was like when you have something that you're like, I know that this is amazing and I believe in it and I know that this product is great, then it means you, people can tell when you're selling things, like when you really mean it and love it. So I think that was the key, because we both obviously believed in the thing that we like separated off to do. And that made all the difference. Yeah. So it was good.
Yeah, cool. And then how did Girls Get Off come about?
So Joe's the current business partner. She had a personalized cookie business, and we actually shot some content for her when she first started out. And
so that's how you met her, just through
Yeah, work? That's how we met her. Yeah. And so we knew each other, we were already friends, and we had actually been chatting about something that we could do together, because we knew we were always on the same wavelength. We yeah, we thought that we wanted something that we could have fun with a lot of the marketing and also scale it and, you know, build something up. And we'd looked at a lot of different things. We actually at one stage had looked at doing like really well-branded Goonsack because we thought that
Like wine?
Like cask wine.
Yeah,
because we figured that, oh, okay, there's lots of – I think it was at the time my sister was at uni and I think part-time rangers were just coming in. It was the first time I'd ever seen uni students make – alcohol purchasing decisions based on brand, not on like standards per volume. Like I'm still a scrumpy gal, you know, and I think that's a great drop for like $8 for 1.25 liters.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was amazed that they're buying, you know, spending $27 on 30 cans or 10 cans. Like that was just madness to me. So we thought, well, if we could create something that was really well branded and fun and, you know, we could play into some fun advertising, then that would be great. But lucky we didn't launch that because Pals came out a few months later and we were like, dear God, at least we didn't try and put some cask wine up against them. You know, some country up against some like watermelon sodas. Yeah. So, yeah, that all worked out. And then during lockdown, Joe said, like, what about sex toys? You know, like they're kicking off at the moment. Everyone's talking about them, but no one's really marketing them in a way that's like in your face, progressive, makes you feel good about yourself. You know, you're either finding out about this because your friends have told you about it or because you've seen a viral review online. Like no influencers are saying like, look at this great toy that I got. And then if you want to buy one, you've either got to go to the weird shop down the road and talk to like, you never know who you're going to talk to at the counter. Go on the back exit. The shop down the road from us, you walk in the back exit and you like go straight into a sex swing. It's like, that's coming in very hot if you're just new to the toy scene.
I feel like that's for people that aren't new to it.
They know what they want, you know, they've been around the block, they're not buying their first vibrator, you know. And then when we were doing our research, we were looking online and it's like, okay, here's a website, you know, the business has been going for 20 years, clicking on Toys for Her, it's like 800 search result, like 800 matches to your search. It's like, oh my gosh, that's so overwhelming, especially when you don't necessarily know what you want, you don't know what's good, you don't want to go in store because you're not like, it's an embarrassing experience, so you're online and you're like, I don't know what any of these look like, you know. I'm sure we've all heard like stories of people buying like dildos that are like twice the size that they thought they were or something like that, you know. So we were like, well, let's create something that makes buying sex toys a fun, simple, positive buying experience and something. And to begin with, we spent 18 months only selling one toy. So we thought, let's just start with one toy and we'll be like, this is the one toy that you need. It's going to get the job done. Makes it super easy for people to choose.
I like that, get the job done.
Yeah, get the job done. And yeah, so that's how we started out with that business.
And what was that first toy?
That was Missy. So she's like an external toy, which means, again, it's like super easy to use. You can't get it wrong. And she's like a clit sucker or like a clit pulsing toy. So she creates like a light vacuum around the clit. It's got like a little nozzle and you pop that on, it creates a light vacuum around the clit and it's a pulsing sensation. So it's very different from a traditional vibrator. When I'm at shows or in person, like I put it, people's thumbs on the toy to help them understand what it feels like. And a standard vibrating toy actually in a way feels more intense, but the feeling of Missy on your clit is intense in a different way. Like I remember the first time I used a toy like this and I was like, oh my God. Like, actually, I think my words were more like, oh fuck. Like, what? Like, it's just, it really is like, And like, I'm a big advocate for having your pocket vibes and your little vibes, buzzing ones as a part of the toolkit. But I just think that the clit stim toys are a whole different level of pleasure.
And how do you go about, wrong way to put it, the testing process? How many people do you get to test, or do you just use it yourself and go, jackpot, there is no doubt about it? And have you had any duds?
Yeah, so we have, like, I mean, at the beginning it was always just Joe and I, and I've always, like, within our friend group, we're always pretty open about talking about this topic. So to this day, and even when I'm at expos, if I know someone's like appears quite open or like wants to talk about them quite freely, I'll ask them, what's your favorite toy at the moment? Or what toy do you reach for the most? So I'm always asking people about what they like because everyone's so different. At the beginning, it was always just Joe and I, and man, there's been some like funny times. Like one of them, one of the toys I remember trying it, and I thought, oh, I might go hands-free for this one. And I legitimately fell to my knees in the shower, and the shower's still going, and I'm having this orgasm, and I'm just like, like the water in my face. And I was like, dear God, like I text Joe, I was like, okay, I think we've just found our second toy. Like that was ridiculous.
So which one was that?
Oh, that was the Tiff. Okay. That was the Tiff. So
was yeah, Tiff, is Tiff not around anymore?
No, Tiff is around, but she's actually available in Australia at the moment, not New Zealand. And okay. We're actually doing a redesign of her. So we're Ooh. Zhuzhing her up a little bit, which is going to be exciting. But we like, I mean, there was also a time where we just bought so many toys. We're like, we need to try everything. And our house actually got robbed at one stage. So we were away for the weekend somewhere, you know, just trying to enjoy ourselves, go skiing. And I realized that like my card had fraudulent transactions pop up. And I realized actually that's the card at home. So I'm like figuring out, sending friends around, figure out we've been robbed, waiting for the cops the next day outside. They come in, you've got to walk through and say, that's been taken, that's been taken, that's been taken. And I said, hey, as you're looking around, just so you know, I'm starting a sex toy brand and there's heaps of sex toys in that drawer, just a heads up. And we were laughing about it, and I'm waiting outside and I said, did you end up checking that drawer? And he said, no. And I thought, oh, do you mind if I just go and have a look? Because I like remember in the back of my mind that I could see pink through the little opening in the drawer and like previously. And I went in there. They open the drawer. Sure enough, all my sex toys gone. Pillowcase gone. I'm like, oh my gosh, they've made off like reverse Santa. They've taken all my sex toys. Meanwhile, my housemate at the time, she's in her room, like opening up birthday cards, going like, oh my God, they left my cash. I'm like,
they knew the good stuff. Like,
they got the good stuff and they made off. And then that was it. So that was extremely funny. You know, like awesome. Take my laptop, take my cards, whatever, spend up at the BP, and you also take all my sex toys. We were honestly in hysterics.
Pick me
while I'm down. The cops, we were just crying with laughter. It was so funny.
Were the cops laughing with you as well?
Oh, they were laughing so hard. Yeah. And they actually told us this other story about when they were in Makatu at a job, and someone had they been robbed or something, and then like the dog came bounding back over with like a dildo in its mouth in front of the person who's just had everything stolen. It was so good.
Oh gosh, they must have some good stories though. and you've got great stories.
I know, right?
Could you do your Sunday night confessions? Is it Sunday night on Instagram?
We do.
There's some goodies there.
Oh my gosh. So I think the idea for confessions happened even before we launched Girls Get Off. Like we just had all these funny things we wanted to do, and we were constantly keeping a list of like, oh, that'd be a fun campaign, or we can do that on Instagram. And so one of the aims with Instagram was always, how can we create content that we want people to share? And we also wanted people to like feel like they were a part of something. And I guess you would call that like community now. And we started confessions right from the get-go, like I think first week into doing Girls Get Off. So the way that confessions works, we put up a question box every Sunday evening and people write in what they've been up to over the weekend. And so the confessions that come through, after 3 years of doing confessions, I'm pretty desensitized. There's not much that like makes me hysterically laugh anymore, but they're all so good. And people love them. I think the funniest part about confessions is when you see that people are getting inspiration week to week. So, you know, one person will be having sex in the kitchen 1 week, and then like a week later, you know, three other people have been bent over the kitchen bench. And we had one recently. I don't know if you've listened to the Sex.Life podcast with Morgan Penn.
Some of it,
Hayley Sprout, so good. Yeah. And I was listening the other day to one of the episodes, and she was talking about how she went and got like a sensual massage. And then the week after that, I can see that there's two people in the confession saying that they've paid for like a massage with a happy ending. So it's funny. It's always funny to see the trends coming through. And actually, now that I'm saying this now, we did have a phase where a lot of people were pegging their boyfriends, and that actually hasn't come up for a while. So maybe pegging's on the out as well.
Yeah. So what's next? Because obviously you can dictate what everyone's going to do. So what do you reckon you're going to throw out there?
In terms of trends?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I don't know. Maybe like, I don't know. I think maybe more people need to, I'm just not sure. At the moment, we've released a libido supplement. So a lot of people are writing in talking about how that's really getting them going again, which is cool. But awesome. I think we'll continue seeing that one for a while. I'm not really sure of any major trends that are happening, but I'm gonna keep an eye out now.
Good, good. And I love that with the libido supplements, it kind of links back to the stuff you did with the deer and the products and and your food science.
I know. So the deer dicks or the deer pizzles, that the reason that they are used overseas is that they're thought to be an aphrodisiac. So sometimes people will put them in whiskey and do shots of whiskey. Now we've got this libido supplement. Ours doesn't have any pizzle in it. But it does have a lot of clinically proven herbs, which is great.
Awesome.
And the reason we launched the libido was because we asked our audience like 2 years ago now, what's the one thing that would improve your sex life? And so other than people saying, if I had someone to have sex with, or if my husband did the dishes, we were overwhelmingly struck with people saying libido related issues, whether that be like mismatched libido, or I've got no libido anymore, or my libido's changed after kids or medications or whatever. And so that's why we set out to produce the libido product with some experts that we contracted. And it's gone well. It's good. It's really cool. It's just fun, you know?
Yeah, so fun. And the progression of the business, so did it take off straight away? It was in COVID times. It would have been, you know, it's a perfect time to, you know, people are bored at home, so
yeah,
genius.
I know, right? Look, I think especially with the name Girls Get Off, we had an advantage in that whenever it was shared, or you know, it took a lot of grind work to actually get people to share it, or you know, with some of the influencers that we used. But once we did, people were so curious about what it was, and it was so new and so not seen on Instagram that it did take off quite well. And I think when we launched pre-sales or something, we might have had like, I don't know, 20 or 30 within like the first week, and we were like, this is amazing, you know? Yeah. So I think it was like a good intersection between, COVID, and there's like awareness around sex toys in general, plus people are at home, you know? And then on top of that, you've got marketing that wasn't really done before in the space, and it was just so different to seeing like someone with a protein powder or a waist trainer or something that grew your eyelashes longer. It was like, oh my gosh, you know, Simone Anderson's talking about a sex toy, and it was just very different from what people had seen.
Yeah. And what have you been your most successful marketing campaigns?
Influencer campaigns worked really well for us at the beginning. So I think, again, because it was so new and different, it was just that shock factor. Now, not so much, like we don't have the shock factor as much. We still have people that we work with on affiliate, so it just gives them free rein to post whenever they want, whatever we want. Sorry, whenever and whatever they want about Girls Get Off. So now we kind of focus a lot on being our own creator, I guess. And what else works well for us? I mean, it always works well when we get like press. So when we get articles written about us in the paper and stuff, I think that's just another form of like social proof in terms of, you know, if you tell someone about your product, they're never going to believe it as much as if someone else tells you about someone else's products. For example, if it was an influencer, or if it's coming from like a news source. So yeah, those have been a couple of things that have worked really well for us. There's been some other, random things that we've done, like funny billboards, but that has then led to press. So,
what was the funny billboard?
We've done a few different ones. One of my favorites was one that we did just in COVID. So I don't know if you remember the lockdown that Auckland was in. I think I don't want to get this wrong,
like October-ish,
but it was 4 months or something that they were locked up for. And we knew that when they got out, half of them would be driving down to the Mount, because that's where a lot of Aucklanders have beach houses. And so we wanted to have a billboard that said, Aucklanders are coming, so can you. And in the initial spot that we wanted, there was this new billboard site that had gone up in the middle of the Mount. We thought, perfect, that's going to be great. We went and asked the buyers for it, and they said, you can't have it there because the landowner is too conservative, but we've got a spot on State Highway 2 that actually, it turns out the guy who owns the spot used to sell sex toys. So he says, do whatever you want. So we were like, oh, this is great. So we had, I think it was 2 weeks before Christmas, we had Aucklanders Are Coming, So Can You. And it was right on the day where everyone was being released. And there was like traffic backed up like I've never seen before. And we actually saw an increase in sales from that billboard that day, which was like amazing. Not, it wasn't our intention, but we got it anyway.
It was more awareness, was it?
More awareness. And then the week after we did Christmas Is Coming, So Can You. So then that was the lead up to Christmas, which was great as well. We actually ended up getting a complaint for the billboard that said, I think it was the Aucklanders Are Coming or one of them, but that ended in a press article for us. So we were like, brilliant. Thank you very much. So that was, those are a couple of things that went really well. And do you know, to be honest, it goes equally as well like in person as it does online. So when our community sees that we're putting these billboards up and they can see that it's like a real billboard, they just love it and engage on it so much. And so we played on the fact that we got a complaint as well, because we just did a visual, like a mock-up version of another billboard after we'd put on our stories, like, oh, someone's complained, you know, and then we get this press article. We had Karen Will Give You Something to Moan About, and so that was like a little feed post that we did.
Oh, that's and, like, so fun.
The people just love it. So just having a little bit of fun with it, works in our favor too.
Yeah, and it's so true. The stuff you do in person or on the ground is just as much about it being for social as it is for people actually seeing it or being involved.
Totally. And I feel like, for anyone with businesses out there or people considering it, I feel like billboards always seem really out of reach or really expensive. But the workaround is to be disorganized, which aligns with us quite well most of the time, and ask for distressed rates. So I think for us to get 2 weeks, like those 2 weeks of billboards, it might have only been like $500, because if you ask because we literally asked like the Friday before, saying, have you got any distressed rates? Have you got any spots left? And unless they can sell the spots, they're not going to make any money at all. So normally if you do it last minute, they'll have distressed rates, and it means that you can get your billboards for cheap. These are digital ones.
Did you have
digital
ones. Okay. So did you have it already designed and ready to go?
Yeah, already designed, ready to go. And then, you can just get them up. And it doesn't always have to be the day before. But, for the most part, if you're looking at like a week before, you can normally suss some distress rates, and it's a win-win.
Awesome. That's great advice. Any other tips and tricks while we're here?
I'm not sure. Marketing related, I think I would suggest always figuring out like where your target audience is going to be. And it sounds really boring, but I mean, there's been plenty of things we've done in the past. It might be like an influencer, for example, where we've gone like, they're big, they're trending, they're female, this is going to work. But then you work with them or you pay thousands of dollars and then you go, oh, it didn't quite work.
You feel like you've been robbed, basically.
Yeah. And you have to take a step back and go, actually, what's the number one reason people are following this person? Is it because they're using it as like a shopping feed and they really relate to what they have to say? Or is it just because they want to, like, I don't know, have inspiration or look at bikini photos? Like, what is the real value?
Yeah, and I think a lot of those big ones, they are promoting so much stuff that people tend to not believe it. Whereas if you are working with someone smaller that doesn't do as much of it, they've got a really trusted audience.
Yeah. And I think that it just depends, like, it just depends product to product. Like, I know some people that have used influencers that we've used and they have had amazing results, and others not so much. I think it also, it can depend on the price of your product. We've got a relatively high like average order value, so that works well in our favor. We also find that actually our term for it was unpolished influencers are the best for us. And unpolished could be in terms of vulnerability and what they share, or unpolished in terms of like just general relaxedness. We found that people who are a little bit too far away from what the average New Zealand woman looks like or speaks like or whatever doesn't really fly for us. It just depends. And then look, moving to like going into the Aussie market has been like different again. So it's just always about testing and trying.
Which is super fun in your business.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And so the move to Australia was obviously to grow the business in Australia, or did you always want to move over?
Well, I, number one reason was I needed to move for life. Like, yeah. I was like, all right, it's time to get out of the mount, you know?
Yeah.
And
sorry, do you mind me asking how old you are?
I'm 28.
Yeah.
So every time I would come to Aussie, whether it be the Goldie or Sydney, I'd always be like, God, this really feels like home for me. Like, I always feel really connected to the water, and I just like swimming in the water. I do a lot of swimming and surfing and stuff back home too, but swimming in the water when I'm just like warm and it's just beautiful and the visibility is incredible, I'm like, oh, this is just so good, you know?
Yeah.
So I'd always thought that this would be on the cards. I think a friend was moving over at the time, and I thought, like, I should probably just move over as well. And it was coinciding with the fact that we wanted to expand more into Australia. It was definitely a big adjustment period, like going from all being in an office together and just having a really new business to then me, like, you know, skiving off and working remote. There was definitely an adjustment period, and I spent I did a lot of trips back in the first year just while we had got through our teething issues, but it's actually worked out amazing, and we made our whole team remote. And yeah, it's been great ever since. I think Aussie's exciting for me personally because it pushes my brain. I knew moving here, I wasn't quite sure what the benefits would be. I knew there would be benefits, and I knew it would be good for me and for the business, but I just wasn't sure yet. And I think, like anything, it takes time. Like, it wasn't like I moved here and 2 months later, you know, Girls Get Off was going amazing. But now 2 years into it, we're 50-50 Aussie New Zealand. It makes it so accessible for me to, like, I'm going to an e-commerce conference next week or speak at different events like where we met, or test things like expos. Like, there's wholesale trade shows we've been to, and we had to fly over from New Zealand and get all the stuff and do everything, that's like way more risky when you've got that many more costs involved. But when you're just like zipping within Australia, it's just so accessible, which is really great.
And what about where you actually store the products? Have you got somewhere in Australia and somewhere in New Zealand, or do you ship from the same place?
Yeah, we actually do have 3PLs or third-party logistics warehouses in Melbourne and Auckland. So the way that 3PLs work is that where we used to have a warehouse and we used to pick and pack all of our orders and have staff members for that, now we don't touch any of it. And it means that the Shopify account for New Zealand, all the orders just go straight to the 3PL. They sort it out for us. I really liked the 3PL setup, and I think Joe would say exactly the same, because it's one less thing to worry about. You don't have to worry about, I don't know, if the office is clean in the, you know, in the kitchen, or you don't have to worry about if we have a sale, like, oh, can everyone come and help, like sticker bags and satchels, or if we have, you know, who's going to pack orders over Christmas, like all of those variables are just gone.
Amazing.
You can sell as many as you want, like they just sort everything out for you. Yeah, so we love our 3PLs.
And if you don't mind me asking, is it like a flat rate per month or per sale, or?
So they charge, so normally your 3PLs will get a better shipping rate for you anyway, because they're shipping for like a number of other different businesses. Mm-hmm. And then they pay like a flat rate for like a pick pack fee. So, you know, it might be like $2 or $3 for them to like put everything into the box, and then you're paying for the shipping rate. And then you pay an amount for storage too. So it actually worked out cheaper for us to do 3PL rather than doing it ourselves, plus all those benefits that I just talked about.
Yeah.
But I guess when you get to a certain stage, then it could work out that you'd save, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars if you were doing like squillions of orders every week.
Yeah.
But yeah, you'd have to go down the path of getting warehouse managers and stuff. So we'll just see where we land, but we love the way it is at the moment.
Awesome. Now, before we chatted today, you said some of the challenges that you've faced. While we're still on the business topic, getting your first employee, when was that? And
oh my gosh,
tell us about it.
Yeah, so first employee, I think we'd had contractors beforehand, and it was when I...
Sorry, which business?
Oh, sorry, agency.
Yeah.
So with the agency, we'd had contractors beforehand, and when Tash and I split up what we were doing, she went off and did content, I went off and did account management. I realized very quickly, like, I'm going to have to hire someone. And you could either get a design, you know, someone to contract for that, or I was like, I'm going to hire someone. And I think that was, I was like terrified. I was like, oh my gosh, what if I don't make enough money to pay them? Like, I'm locked in. What if I, you know, what if they're not good enough and I need to, like, you know, fire them, or, you know, like, mix things around or restructure. And I remember thinking, like, I'm so nervous about this. But at the same time, I was like, I can just imagine looking back, you know, give me 3 years' time, I'll look back and, you know, hiring people will be no big deal at all. So, yeah, I feel like that was just one particular moment where it was just so nerve-wracking, because you just feel such a sense of responsibility and, like, commitment, and it just feels very scary and different.
Yeah, totally. There's so much to learn as well, you know, people management, and it's sort of endless.
Yeah. But which I clearly don't have very much experience in, you know what I mean? I think there was a stage where Joe and I was like, Joe, neither of us have really worked real jobs for that long. I'm like, it's not like, you know, a friend who's in corporate. I'm like asking them questions. And I actually really like talking to my friends who are employees about their work and, like, finding out how they're feeling. Like, I feel like a lot of the time, I would say that the most common thing that I've learned from friends who are employees is they'll get resentful or they'll be annoyed because they're not feeling recognized or appreciated. I reckon that's probably the number one reason. Like, they'll be feeling like they're working really hard and it's just sort of going unnoticed. So I feel like I learn just as much about managing people and, like, how to work through that, of which I'm by far no means an expert or very good at it yet. But I think, yeah, the learning comes in all different places.
Yeah. And how big is your team now?
So we have we used to have a bigger team of employees, and then when we went remote, we've actually switched it up a little bit. So we've got Joe, myself, and Hannah, who are, like, full-time. She's like a designer, and then we've got another casual employee, and then the rest of our team is actually made up of contractors. So, you know, we've got different contractors for email, for ads, for 3PL, and for, like, general conversion rate and so on. So it's in customer service and just general admin. So where we used to try and get people to wear multiple hats, now we've kind of gone specialist in with contractors. And I think, you know, someone gave me some advice a while ago, and they said it's actually, you know, it's cheaper to get employees, but it also, because we're such a new business still and we're still figuring out what works and what we need, sometimes it's actually better to pay more money, get contractors, and you can actually figure out if you need those skills or not. Because obviously they get income from different sources. And if it doesn't work out, you just give the notice period. It's not like if you hire all these people and then you go, oh, actually, we don't need that anymore. Or actually, our business has changed and you've got to go through, like, big restructure process. And it's just very distracting it's very distracting. And it's also not very, like, it's not always, like, the nicest process to go through with people. Yeah. So so we actually stick to, like, specialist contractors where we can at the moment.
That's super interesting. Has there been a bit of trial and error with the people, or have they been pretty good straight off the bat?
Oh, totally. I think there's always going to be trial and error with people, and it's like a two-way street, you know. We trial and error with people. There's been multiple occasions where we've been like, oh, we need to do YouTube or something, you know, and we'll get someone on, and they might not have experience in that, and you're expecting someone to do something that they don't know what they're doing, or, you know, we haven't given clear enough instructions, or, you know, our people management has let us down. So, yeah, absolutely been trial and error, but I don't think that there's any startup who could say that they haven't had that phase.
Oh, gosh, no. Yeah. Oh, always learning.
Always learning. Yeah. And even friends I talk to now who've got businesses, you know, 10 times the size, they're like, you'll never stop learning. Mm. Like, there's always going to be people stuff that you'll be learning things for. So, I mean, that's kind of reassuring.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Another thing you spoke to me about was the Ironman. And obviously you spoke earlier about the swimming. So,
oh, yes,
that makes sense. Hold on, Ironman's just running, isn't it?
No, it's three. It's a big triathlon. Yeah, so I'd been for a run one day, and well, actually, Must have been years ago. I remember being a kid and my mum had taken us to watch the Iron Man in Taupo. And I remember thinking, like, this is just wild. Like, this is just such a big day. It was just like, I don't know what age I would have been, but it was a friend of hers who was in it. And I went for a run one day and I actually went with this group called Jogging the Power Poles in Rotorua, if anyone's up for a run. They're an awesome group and I know that they still go and it's a free thing. And I remember turning up on the day and a lot of them were training for ultras and they said, you know, they're in different groups and I was new and they were like, oh, how far do you want to run today? And I said, oh, I don't know, how long is everyone else running? The first group's like, we're doing 15K. I'm like, what? Another group's like, we're doing 10, we're doing 5. I'm like, what is going on? How are these people casually running 15K?
Yeah.
And I did not go on the 15K group and I went and say, I don't know, 10 or something. And they're like all training for ultras. So they're like walking up the hills. They're like, keep your heart rate low. We're all just chilling and chatting. And in that moment, I realized like, oh, this is how people run long distance. Like, it's not like cross country when you go out and you like sprint and just hold on to the end. And it just like the penny dropped for me as to how it happens. And then one of the weeks, a lady, I can't remember her name, was said to me that she'd done an Ironman. She said it was the best day of my life. It was just so cool. And so that day I went home and I'm like, I'm going to do an Ironman. And my mum's like, don't you think you should run a marathon first? I was like, nah, it'll be fine. I was like,
sorry, how old were you at the time?
21.
Yeah.
And I emailed the lady who actually I'd been to watch in the Ironman all those years earlier because she was an Ironman coach. Oh, I was like, cool. Hey, Lindy, I want to do the Ironman in March. She's like, have you asked your mum? Because I think you probably want to wait on, you know, your body's probably not actually ready for that. And if you wait a few years, it'll be like fully grown. She's like, but I know you're going to do this anyway. So if you really want to do it, then I'll take you on. I'm like, yep, mum doesn't really have a choice. So let's do it.
And P.S.,
so,
you're my idol.
Obviously. Yeah, she's mental. Yeah, so that was just, yeah, that was an interesting journey. That was very hard to train for. But I also think that I'm glad I didn't train for too long for it, like taking a whole year to train. I'm not out there, you know, my friends call me the ultimate participant, like not particularly fast at anything, but I'm out there participating, you know, getting it
That's
done.
Awesome. Yeah.
So I'm like, I'd worked out like, okay, if it all turns to custard, I know I can power walk and still make the cutoff for the run, you know? So yeah, no, it was good. It was a very big day, but it genuinely was one of the best days of my life. And I would encourage, anyone to give it a go.
And it's that whole pushing yourself out of your comfort zone, isn't it? And the fact that you've done that and you've achieved that, does that help you through challenging times with business and in life?
Yeah, totally. I think the hardest thing that I found about business at one stage is I was like, there's no finish line. I'm like, at least in an Ironman, you know, you're like doing it all day, but then you're like, oh God, I'm done now.
Yeah.
But I do think that it's exactly the same. I mean, the finish line of business is just your goals and like what you set out to do. I think that it's all just grit, isn't it? You know, like it's all just like hanging on and just getting it done and not falling into the deep dark hole of like, I can't do it, you know, like you just gotta keep going and one foot in front of the other and just be like, yeah, present and into it.
Yeah. And it's realizing, you know, that it's not all roses, isn't it? And that there are tough days and you just have to keep going and not give up.
And sometimes you just need to take a week off and just tell your coach training was all good for the week and just make it up. Turn up on the day and get it done, you know?
Get your missy out and then refocus.
Exactly.
And then the other thing was depression in 2019, 2020.
I know that was such a hard year for me. And I didn't actually, you know, I didn't even realize that I had it. I think at the time there'd been a number of things that had kind of be the catalyst. I think there was, you know, a big part of it was working really hard and just not seeing the results that we wanted or that we were, you know, that we could see that were kind of possible, but it just felt so out of reach and like, oh my God, are we ever going to earn more than like $200 a week?
You were in your agency at this time, correct?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And it was just so full on. And when I was at uni, it would come in waves, you know, like I remember the day I couldn't get out of bed in the morning and I was just so like, I felt really trapped in my bed. I felt really beside myself and I just could understand that moment, how people take their own lives, because that was like, that was one day for me, but I can imagine how, if that was your every day, why you would just want to escape. Cause there's just no escape. Like when, for me, like sometimes my brain just feels like it's like just going 1,000 miles an hour, just like rumination to a whole different level, and just like spinning out of control of my own head. And it's just, you're just so trapped. Cause you can, it's not like running. Cause when you finish the run, you're done, you know, the pain's done. Like, it's not like going to the gym and getting fit at the gym. It's like, this is just all consuming. So it was very full on. I think I probably wasn't like the best business partner to be around at the time. I think I was pretty like, but I do also think I probably hit it quite well at the same time. And it wasn't until afterwards. Do you know what? I think the things that got me through were, A, I'd been to a meditation camp years earlier and I'd learned about this concept of change. And it was like, change is the law of nature. Think about the seasons. Like, everything always changes. And so it has to change. So I was like, fuck, I don't know what kind of lesson I'm having to learn here, but I know that it's going to change. Small voice was like, God, I hope it isn't changing any worse, because I don't know what I'm going to do then. But there was a part of me that's like, I know that this is awful, but it does have to change. And then there was another part of me that I actually, when I was at uni, I got my timetable mixed up, and I found myself in this lecture theatre. I put myself right in the middle, and it wasn't a lecture theatre that was like an auditorium sort of thing. It was like tables and chairs. I was in this classroom, I couldn't escape, and it was a physiology lecture, and it was talking about depression. Wow. And it was the bits in your brain and how it's genuinely a chemical imbalance, and it's like not actually your fault. It's like, it's an actual chemical thing, and like, this is what parts are like blocked and all of these things in the brain. So not only did I know, okay, it's got to change, but I also knew that it's like, okay, I know some like shitty things have happened, but it's actually not my fault. Like, this is genuinely not it. I also think that in that state of mind, because you're not thinking very highly of yourself, like, I'd convinced myself that I couldn't afford to go to the doctor, even though that was not true. You know, it was just like different. It was almost like a different way of self-harm in a way, I guess. And it wasn't until, I don't know, maybe months later, maybe like the following year, that I was like, I would go through phases of being like, oh God, I can't go back to that place. And I'd get really nervous, whether it be like thoughts coming into my mind or like different situations, and be like, oh God, I'm very worried that I'll go back down on that slippery slope. And I think I went to a counselor actually. I went to a counselor, and she was like, we can't unpack anything until you go and get checked out by a doctor and make sure that you're all good. The doctor at the time that I went and saw, I was like, I don't know if I, like, I'll do anything to not go back to that place. If you want to put me on antidepressants, then whatever. I'd rather not be on medication, but if that's what it's going to take, I need to sort this out, because I can't go back there again. And he was like, well, it actually sounds like you worked your way out of that, and I think you'll be okay. You can go off and get your therapy and whatever. So, it all worked out in the end, and I feel so far away from that now. And I know the things that will, you know, things like exercise and stuff, those things are all very important to me. And I also know that actually the underlying theme for me over that time was like, probably wasn't being honest with myself. Like, there was a number of things in my life where I probably wasn't being honest with myself, and therefore I was in a very unhappy place. Now I take action on things, you know, whether it be like different relationships or whether it's at work or anything like that. It's really important that I just, you know, keep it very above the line and don't, there's coping things, you know. I'm not sure whether you've experienced anything like that before, but now I'm in a very, very, very different place.
Yeah, it's amazing that, you know, we can get ourselves deep into the hole, but we can also bring ourselves out again, in terms of, you know, if you start to feel yourself going down, if you've got that toolkit already, you've been through the experiences before, that you can, you know, really help yourself to come back up again. I feel like it's getting, you know, it's talked about so much now, and it's so common. There's varying degrees of, you know, how much people are experiencing it. I started mindset in therapy last year, and it's
Oh, cool.
Changed so much for me, and quite a few Dedicate members have as well.
Nice.
Yeah, I guess if there's someone listening out there thinking, mate, you know, should I go and get help? Should I not? Like, what would your advice be?
Yeah, well, now, shout out to Surf Life Saving, because that was actually the biggest driver for me in actually going to get some help, because they had, is it called EAP, like the free counselling. So I think there's actually a lot of, you know, if you've got EAP through workplaces, which it might not be like overly advertised, but there actually may be avenues for to go and get it. And actually now I've seen multiple different therapists after that, and I actually would treat it as a preventative now. So now I don't really see a therapist so much unless I see something in my life pop up that seems to be a pattern that I don't like. So I think that go and see someone anywhere. It's no different to like if you've got a sore body part, you know what I mean? Or look at it as in terms of like optimizing. Like I was like, why do I have to wait until I'm like literally can't get out of bed or something, and I like can't bring myself to, you know, even go see a therapist, or I'm just like, your head's in such a strange place. So why wouldn't I just like sort then? And the point I made about like being honest with myself, like if I find that there's something like, I don't know, perfect example, if I'm constantly dating the wrong person, or, you know, then going to see the therapist before that and going like, why, let's unpack this. Why is this happening? I think that's been key for me. And the thing as well is that, and also in the worst times, I was like, fuck, do you know what? I was like, I'm the only one who's got myself here, and unfortunately I'm gonna have to be the one to get out. And I think that viewing those therapy sessions as like, you know, they'll tell you the truth or you'll realize the truth, and you actually have, it's like that's actually only where the hard work begins. Like you don't just swan in there and like, oh perfect, it's all good. You gotta be like, oh no, now I know what the problem is. Now I've got to choose differently, or now I've got to do something differently. And it's actually, you've got to treat it like the gym, you know, like you've got to actually do the hard stuff as well. But I feel like it's, you know, it frees you up to live a better life.
It's amazing sorry, I've lost my train of thought. To be honest, I am going through a really tough time at the moment. I'm still battling with concussion and vertigo. And so a lot of my things that I've used in the past, like socializing, exercise, is all quite hard at the moment.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry to hear about that.
Oh no, it's, sorry, I'm probably making it more extreme than it is. But yeah.
That's huge.
Oh yeah.
Being able to exercise is huge.
Yeah. I can do some weights, but I can't do HIIT or running and stuff where you get those, and I can't do the weights to my full, and yeah, just struggling with, brain power.
Fair enough. I'm not surprised.
Yeah. I was actually thinking about it today, how I know I'm going to be talking about this journey that I'm going on now in the future. But it's kind of not a story until you're through it.
Yeah.
Because when you're in it, I don't know, it's not really news yet. I don't know. Do you know what I mean?
And I think that some things, unfortunately, I don't believe that we have to let it get to a stage. But if we do, sometimes the most powerful things are only like, a lot of things are only learned through experience. You don't actually viscerally understand what it means. You know, you can like learn about a concept and like, oh yeah, it'd be better if I like didn't date those avoidable people, but then you make the choice not to, and you have a situation where you're actually tested and you have to make that decision. And then you come out the other side and you go, okay, I get it now, you know, like, and it doesn't have to get to the stage where it's like awful and terrible, because I think you can pick up and make the decision before it gets to an extreme stage. But I think that, yeah, through the really hard times, there's always going to be learnings. You're right. Once you pop out the other side, you'll be like, okay, you know, it's like how I can,
But now after having that therapy, I remember what I was going to say. Now you see yourself about to do something that's kind of your old way, and you can like stop it, and you can go, wow, okay, I'm actually, and you kind of look at yourself from the outside and go, oh, I never get it. This is where I'm supposed to do that.
Totally. Oh my gosh. Like I genuinely, like middle of last year, there was this guy, I was like, oh, such sexual tension. Like, oh my gosh, he's like messaging me, like blah, blah, blah. And I literally, I'm like booking him online with my therapist. I'm like, Billy, I'm like, I'm about to make a bad choice. I'm like, this is my old pattern. This is the universe testing me. What's going on? And she's like, sorry, I'm on maternity leave. I'm like,
oh no.
Like, messaging the next therapist I know on Instagram. I'm like, oh, I need to go on this week. I'm like, I'm seeing him on Friday. I'm like, oh my gosh. And then, yeah, unpacking it and sorting that out. But I'd use that as a backstop now, or like as like a little, you know, zhuzh up when things come along. Or yeah, I'm all for it. And you always learn something. You think like, oh, but it's always value in like seeing a different therapist or someone who can see something from the outside, because and then you go back and you get advice from your mates and you're like, no wonder I'm making the same mistakes, because we're all dishing out terrible advice for each other sometimes.
Yes. You know? And it's all just about the fun of what's sort of happening. You don't realize it at the time, but it's like, yeah, what did he say?
I know. Exactly.
So you're single?
I am single. Yes, I am.
Single and ready to mingle.
Yep, that's the one.
And so have you met some nice Aussie boys then?
I have met some nice boys. Do you know, it's actually just refreshing, even if you're not going on dates with them, that there's just like nice boys available and around. Because I feel like when you've spent, most of your life growing up in Tauranga and the Mount, and then you're out there after uni, there gets to the stage you're like, all right, they're either married or they've left the country, you know? So you've got to do the same as well. My latest strategy is I'm kind of over the apps at the moment, but I've got some really amazing close guy friends, and I had a conversation with one of them the other day. I'm like, I guarantee that you guys will be like gatekeeping some of your hot friends and you haven't even realized, you know? So I've actually made a list. They don't know about this now. I've told them that I'm going to do it. But I've actually made a list of like needs to haves, nice to haves, and deal breakers. Yeah. And I'm going to give them instructions and say, one of them found me a housemate in this way because I had a flatmate criteria and he did an amazing job. And I'm like, if you can find me a flatmate, you can find me a boyfriend. So I've actually got to present my list to them sometime soon and make things black and white, because I already know that there are guys in there, you know, if we Venn diagrammed our friend circles, I already know there are guys on the peripheral that they know of. And I'm like, you guys need to take like 3 seconds out of your life to think about me for once. Yeah, and I think it's fair enough as well. So I'll let you know how that goes.
Definitely do. And do you listen to the We Mean Well podcast?
Yes, I do. I watch their clips on social media.
I'm absolutely obsessed with them. And Lou has found, she's 30 and her new boyfriend is 30. She's found her dream man. He was out there. She just hadn't met him yet.
Yeah. How did she meet him?
I think it feels like she's my mate, but I think he DM'd her just on Instagram.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Well, if my friends don't pull through, I'll probably just put this up on Girls Get Off Instagram page and I'll just get everyone on the job.
Tag us all and we'll all just share it and you'll have your criteria and it'll be.
I know. Yeah. I feel like it's close.
Your Girls Get Off community can find
them. Yeah, pull their weight, you know?
Yeah. Love it. All right. Now I've just got some questions from, it's actually getting really dark in here. some questions from some Dedicate members that I put up on Instagram today, which funny enough, it's hump day. So quite fitting.
So appropriate.
Yeah. So advice to get a partner to be comfortable talking about sex, et cetera, if they're very closed off.
Ooh,
libido supplement in his tea.
Look, I'm not gonna pretend to be a relationship expert or therapist. I would say that a lot of the tips and tricks that I know our audience likes to use is if it's specifically related to, say, you know, a toy you want to use or, something you want to try, then bringing it up and saying, oh, I heard this on a podcast, or, you know, sending them something on Instagram and going, what do you think about this, can be a good starting point. But it sounds like that could be part of like a bigger conversation that you want to have with them and like talking in general. And so I'd say that I'm not qualified to tell you how to do that. But if it were me, I think I'd be, suggesting you go and like unpack that a little bit, or, you know, go and chat with a therapist, whether it's by yourself or together. But my favorite people to follow in the space and around this are the likes of Morgan Penn. I love The Love Drive, or Sean Galanos. Cam Fraser is an incredible men's sexologist, or men focused sexologist as well. And I really like pulling information from sources like them and tips around these topics. And it could be that it's not a standard therapist that you go and see, but it's a sexologist instead. Just depends what you're into.
Yeah, great advice. Oh, here's a good one. What to do if your libido isn't aligned? I think you've got the answer.
Exactly. Well, that's why we created the libido supplement. I mean, there's other things that come into this as well, right? Like, you can take the libido supplement and that's great, but what we also know is that things like diet, exercise, lifestyle things all play a part in this. And so when we did, I mentioned people saying, if my husband did the dishes, that's actually a really huge thing. Like, if I'm assuming that this is a woman, but if there's that huge like mental load that she's carrying all the time, and that's actually part of the reason as to why her libido is low, or I'm making an assumption here because that's often the situation. Then actually I've got another great therapist. Her Instagram is the.maldi.therapist. I'm just checking. And she talks a lot about this, and she's got some great content around, let me just make sure that that's her thing. Oh, it's underscores the_Maldi_therapist. She's got some really great content around this, because all those things play a huge part as well, on top of something like a supplement.
Yeah. I guess it's like trying to outrun a bad diet or something if you
Yeah, totally, totally. And there's also a book which I'm only halfway through. It's called by Emily Nagoski. I'm going to ruin that, but it's called Come As You Are. And so that also dives into like the different accelerators and brakes around your arousal, because it's not always just that simple. And again, I'm just stereotyping here and making the assumption that it might be her with a lower libido, but that can be a really good book to read as well.
Awesome. Advice for getting back dating after a separation.
This is another one where I feel like I'm not qualified.
But I know, but people have asked you. They want your opinion, so don't worry.
But I can tell you about dating. Yeah. And I've actually...
Please do.
Yeah. Do you know what? I think that the best way to approach dating in general is to just treat it as a learning curve and just to have fun with it. I think that, you know, some of my best dates have been like in the middle of the day and you just get coffee when you're in your work clothes and you just meet in the city, and then you don't really have to put in that much effort either because you're in your work clothes.
Yeah.
And just keeping it light and fun and remembering that it really is a numbers game. I think that's been the biggest learning for me. I think I used to go on like a date here and there and be like, oh, that was awful, and like take it personally, or be like, they didn't like me back. And then now it's more like, oh, actually, it's actually okay. And just what did I learn from this one? Oh, I certainly don't want to, you know, be with that guy who was a little bit negative, or I actually really liked how extroverted that guy was, you know? And I think, yeah, reflecting in that way makes it a lot easier to handle.
I think what I've always looked back on and sort of gone, aha, like with people that end up together and someone likes someone, it's actually not that they don't like you as a person. It's just there's something about some people that you're attracted to, or their personality that may be opposite to yours, that they just sort of go together. Whereas I think, totally. I feel like when I was young, I thought it was a reflection on, if someone didn't like me, that it was a reflection on me as a person.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And I feel like the more dates I've gone on, then you have the times where they're into you and you're not into them, you know, whereas previously it felt like they always weren't into me, or like, it wasn't good enough. And then I'd have the situation where, you know, this guy was really into me and I'm like, I actually am not into this, and that's cool. And my line is, sorry, lovely meeting you, but it's not the connection I'm looking for. That's a hot tip. And then message back saying like, have your feelings changed? I'm still really into it, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, wow, that right there is what I've done with people in the past, of, you know, thinking that they were one thing and they're really not into it. So I think then it just softens the blow so much. It's like exposure therapy, you know?
One more. Oh, what advice would you give your 15-year-old self?
Oh, good question. What advice would I give my 15-year-old self? I think I would say to just, I think, you know, like you're better than you think, you know, like have confidence in yourself because you can do whatever you'd like to. And yeah, stop caring about what other people think so much or what they're going to say or do.
Do you
it
think
seems very
like
generic,
that
but I feel
no,
like it's
but
so
I feel
appropriate.
Like that advice is so appropriate. And I feel like if we get to 17, they say, what advice would you give your 28-year-old self? It would be the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Yeah. I think we all underestimate ourselves.
Oh, this is fun. Let me just check my notes and see, make sure I haven't missed anything. Is there anything we might have missed about you, about the business, about your life?
Oh, I don't think so. This has been amazing. This has been an amazing chat. I don't know whether anyone's ever delved so much on the struggles, and I think that that's a really important part of the story. Mm. So I've really liked speaking about that. And yeah, I hope people go away from this and just want to masturbate more and experience more pleasure, you know?
So good.
Feel great about doing it.
This is quite funny. You know how you you said about the Missy having the bit on the top?
Yeah.
So I've had it. I have an a Satisfyer Pro.
Yeah.
And then I got your Missy out yesterday, and I was like, "What the fuck?" So, and I just clicked before that. I haven't put the top on it.
What do you mean your Satisfyer?
No, on the Missy.
No, that's it. That's the Missy. It's just like smaller. Yeah. So the Missy is like smaller.
Okay.
And quieter
cut that.
Than the
edit
SP2.
That bit.
No, you wait. It'll be great.
Yeah. Oh, I'm not going to say. I was going to say I just used the DD, so I think that was my problem. Got to try this
Excellent.
Out.
Excellent. So, the DD is my current fave. So
I was just going to ask that. What's your fave?
Yeah, DD is my favorite at the moment. I'm a big, like, I still need clit stim to get off, but I really enjoy internal stimulation. Mm. So the DD for me, the way that, like, the ribbing is on that toy just does it for me. It's just the best.
Yeah. It's, I'm like, do I want to say this on here? when just using the clit ones, it feels like something's missing. Like you need something else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed. Agreed.
Mm. Not and that I it's not that... good. Like it's fucking amazing, but this just feels like,
yeah,
I'm like waving my hand up.
100% agree. And that, like, I think the Missy's so good because it's so unintimidating. Like anyone can use it, and you don't have to feel like, oh god, where's that going to go, or like freak out about it. Like it's such a good entry level toy, but it's also good for anyone. It just means that, like, getting your foot in the door. But I agree. I remember using my, I think I had an SP2 at the start, and I was using it, and I'm like, it just feels like there's something missing though. Mm. So I'm a huge fan of something in addition as well.
Yeah, and how impressive that DD moves.
Oh yeah, the thrusting toy. Mm. It's my fave. And all the other thrusting toys on the market are like so ugly. Or like, I remember one of the ones I tried, it was like, oh my god, it was so big.
They're
like
black, just, probably.
Yeah, purple actually. Purple. Big perp. Oh, purple. Big perp. God, you need an afternoon if you're gonna use that as like a regular thing. It's full on. But yeah, DD just does all the right things.
Love it. So yeah, get amongst everybody. If you're a Dedicate member, you can use the code to get 20% off. Oh, I should just give it to all the listeners.
Yeah, give it to everyone.
KateIV20. We like to keep our affiliate codes special, like just for our members.
Oh, nice. Yes.
But podcast listeners are mostly Dedicate members with a few others, so they can get amongst it as well.
Perfect.
Yeah, so the Missy would be what you'd recommend first up.
Yeah, Missy's just great. It's just so easy to use with a partner. If you're having sex with someone with a penis, they will feel the vibrations going through at the same time if they're inside you. And of our two toys that would be good for a partner and beginners would be Missy and also Polly, which is that like pocket vibe I talked about earlier. After that, we've got like little spice ratings on each of the toys on our site. So you can choose based on your experience level, whether that be beginner all the way through to advanced.
Awesome. And I do just want to say as well how awesome it is. Like your mission is to take away the taboo and to make it, you know, not a shameful thing to talk about. And you are totally doing that at the huddle. It was so cool. Everyone was felt so empowered. And that lady standing up and saying that she had a business, like a cottage or something on the water, and you walk around the lake or something. And she said, oh, and you might bring your missy along or something like that. You might bring your sex toy along. It's really cool. And after this, I'm going to post my unboxing of sex toys. So you've empowered me.
Yay.
And that's going to be as my message with it as well, as yeah, that you have done that. So well done. It's awesome.
Thank you so much. Yes, much appreciated. I think that the more we talk about these things, that, you know, we should be able to talk about this. And one day we will get to the stage where this is as just normal as talking about the weather. And that's just like everyone wins. Nothing bad comes from talking about pleasure. Like when you really stop and think, it's like, actually only like taboos and stuff are the things that are holding you back, or like those little uncomfortable feelings. But at the end of the day, like what's going to happen from this? Like you're going to experience more pleasure and probably have some more orgasms, and there's nothing wrong with that.
No, and randomly in the middle of the day as well. Especially if you work from home.
Exactly. I know. I'm actually at home for once, but normally it's a no-go zone for me. Too tempting.
Yeah. The only thing I am like a bit like, oh, about is with posting this is my father-in-law is super supportive of all my posts. And my son's on Instagram now. So,
yeah. Oh no. Yeah. Well, Joe's got a 16-year-old son, and yesterday we were having a meeting and I was talking about a new product, and I said, oh, that'd actually feel really nice when you're getting fingered. And she was just like, I don't have my AirPods in, and Jake's just across the table from me. I'm like, perfect, great, amazing, cool, you're welcome, Jake.
Oh, I love it. Her kids, oh, she got one? Two?
Two kids, yeah.
They must have heard so much.
So much. So much, mostly on accident, but like, poor Jo, she's like, oh, no.
And I wonder what the conversations at school, like, what does your mum do?
Yeah. They are. I know, so love good. It.
Oh, thank you so much for your time, Viv. So great to see you again. So great to catch up. And yeah, thank you for all your valuable insights, both on business and female pleasure, all of it. It's been fabulous.
Thank you so much for having me. Love your work. And yeah, hopefully this helps a few people out there.
I'm sure it will. Combine this and exercise team, you've got a winning formula.
Yeah, exactly. Amen.
Thank you all so much for listening to the Dedicate podcast, and thank you so much to Viv for her time today. If you want to get yourself some pleasure toys from Girls Get Off, use code KATEIVY20 for 20% discount, and of course, come and join us on Dedicate if you're not already a member. A huge variety of short and effective online workouts you can do anytime and anywhere with our supportive community of women across New Zealand and Australia. Head to kateivyfitness.com for your 7-day free trial, and I'll see you there. Thanks, everybody.